On Truth Be Told, we've talked about past lives and we've talked about ancient Egypt, but I'm not for sure if we've ever talked about the two together. Today we have author Catherine Dees talking about her book, Om Seti, Egypt, a story of ancient mysteries, secret lives, and the lost history of the pharaohs. It's based on the diaries of Dorothy Eady, but better known as Om Seti, where as a child, she had a tragic accident, died, came back to life, and then remembered her past lives of ancient Egypt. And her past lives led Egyptologists to new discoveries. So I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, the amazing Catherine Dees. Miss Catherine.
Howdy, Tony.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to see you in Egypt.
I know, right? I said, woo, it's hot in here. I have my spray bottle to keep the moisture going. Well, thank you for being here. This is a topic that we've never actually touched on before, so I'm excited to have you on the show. And like I said, we've talked to many Egyptologists, and we've talked to many people in past lives, but we've never really connected the two together. So, first of all, you wrote this amazing book about an amazing lady. This is not a nonfiction made up story. This was actually a true story, right? This was Om Seti. Can you tell us who this lady was and how you got started in your research and search to create this book?
Yes, indeed. It was sort of a windy path. Just to start with Om Seti, she was, if Om Seti's story were just about who she was as an Egyptologist, as an extraordinary adventurer in the early to mid to latter part of the 20th century, it would be an incredible story. If it didn't have the dramatic paranormal aspect to it, and the two together make her quite a unique character.
Right.
And as you say, she had an experience when she was a young child. I'll talk about that a little bit later, though. I had heard about Om Seti. I'd read about her earlier. I'd been to Egypt a few times before I met the man who had been her confidant for 25 years in Egypt, and with whom she shared her extraordinary paranormal experiences, as well as her deep knowledge of Egyptology, because she was a brilliant woman.
Right.
Even without that other part. So I had been in Egypt a few years earlier than the time I met my co-author on a project in Alexandria looking for the tomb of Alexander the Great. And it was, by the way, an experiment in psychic archaeology, but that's another story. One evening I was in Egypt. I was at a dinner party in a beautiful apartment overlooking the Nile and with a group of Egyptian friends. And one of them said, oh, you must meet Hani El-Zaini. He's the one who knew all about Om Seti. Hmm. Well, I'd been fascinated by the idea of Om Seti. I knew something about her. She had died a couple of years before. So I marched up to Hani El-Zaini and introduced myself. And we spent the rest of the evening talking. And we became good friends. I was invited to tea the next day with his wife. And he played me a couple of cassette tapes of his conversations with Om Seti. And they were stunning. The voice of this woman talking about the past. And in one of the tapes, she was talking about where Nefertiti's lost tomb could be found. And it wasn't any place that people were looking. And she was fairly specific. And she had her reasons for being sure.
Right.
So I'll tell you a little bit about Haniel Zaney and what brought him to be a partner in inquiry with Om Seti. And he was a man of science. He had grown up to be a chemist. He had risen very high in the Egyptian sugar industry, which was like General Motors in the US, big, big time. And at the time of the revolution in 1952, all of the European ownership was done away with. And he was brought in to be director of this enormous and far-flung industry, the first native Egyptian. He also happened to be an amateur Egyptologist. And the main distilleries of the sugar company happened to have been planted on the major archaeological working sites all over Egypt. So he's a Renaissance man, right. And here's his opportunity to explore all sides of himself. So one day he went to investigate the new digs at Abydos, which was not far from Nag Hammadi. And he met this so-called crazy Englishwoman that people were talking about. And he found her to be not crazy at all. She was bright, she was funny, and she knew an awful lot about Abydos, the ruined temple that she was helping to restore, and all things ancient Egypt.
Wow.
And they formed a bond that lasted for 25 years until her death. And I was the inheritor later on when Hanny asked me if I would join him to write this book, the inheritor of boxes of cassette tapes of their conversations, reams of diary entries, his own personal diaries. I was the novelist brought in to string it all together and make it into the story it needed to be. So there I was.
Wow. That's amazing how everything just kind of fell into place. Did you feel like this was like a destiny happening?
Yeah, he liked the word chiasma.
Right.
Kismet.
Yeah.
Yeah, he felt that his coming together with Om Seti and then his and my meeting at the dinner party. Yeah, it was supposed to be. It took a few years for us to get to that, but it happened, I was ready.
Yeah, I'm sure it took a while to, get that trust.
We had been thinking about writing another book before that about.
Oh, okay. About what you were thinking about.
Pharaoh.
Yeah. Wow. And what's fascinating, because like I said, we're talking about ancient Egypt, but also with the past lives, where Om Seti, do you feel like she was intuitive, not just of the past, but was she very intuitive of the current and future?
I'm not quite sure how I would interpret intuitive. Her mind went in all directions. She was an artistic person.
Right.
So she had, a lot going on,
right,
on all sides of her brain. She was someone who didn't like the idea of all of these Nefertitis and Hatshepsuts and Cleopatras wandering around. Even though here she was someone who had vivid memories of a past with a pharaoh, for heaven's sakes.
Right.
But she herself had been a humble young priestess in the temple. But she was so sharp in figuring out motivations and discounting things that didn't make sense to her.
Well, let's go back to where Dorothy Eady had the accident as a child. Do we know, or do you know of, before the accident, was she having any type of memories before that, or was it the actual accident that triggered the
Apparently, only the accident. She was 3 years old.
And could you tell us about that? Could you tell us about what happened? And
yeah, she was living with her parents, who were regular people, not given to anything too bizarre, except that her father was a master tailor, and he had aspirations to be an actor. But anyway, because he said, here we are, we're all Irish, so what else? So 3 years old, she falls down a flight of stairs at the family apartment and appears to die. And the doctor was called for. He examined her, said, I'm sorry, she is gone. And they took her upstairs to her room. The doctor went off to prepare the death certificate and bring a nurse to prepare the body. And when they returned, the little girl was sitting up in her bed eating candy. And what she said later in her life, when she was Omsetti and not Dorothy, she said, all I know is that when I woke up, something had jiggled my head and I was not the same little kid.
So pretty much Dorothy did die that day.
She appeared to have died. What she was when she woke up was an altered consciousness. Mm. And she didn't know what it was, but she started having dreams almost immediately of a beautiful place with gardens and pillars. 3 years old, she didn't know what that was.
Right, it's hard to kind of...
But she kept telling her parents, I want to go home. Because that was home.
Right. Wow.
Of course, her parents, being regular people, hoped that it would just, you know, she'd grow out of it. It was just a spell, but it just got worse. Until they took her to the British Museum on a little outing that should have been very boring for the little girl. But as soon as they got to the Egyptian section, she just fell apart. She ran around hugging the legs of the statues and putting her little face against the glass. And her parents didn't want a scene, so they tried to remove her, and she wouldn't go. She said, I want to stay here. These are my people.
Wow.
Speaking of the, you know, the gods.
So,
well, it just, you know, got worse.
So she, because this was about age 10 is when they went to the...
Not yet.
Not yet?
She was only 4 or 5. And then shortly after that, her father brought home a magazine, Exploration magazine, with photographs. And she saw a photograph of the Abydos temple, the Seti temple, and was very upset because it was all ruined. But she knew that place.
Hmm.
And then he turned the page and there was a photograph of the Pharaoh Seti. And she knew him too.
Well, we don't know if that's exactly the reconstruction, but that's definitely his mummified body.
You know, if you had to be a mummy, I think that's a pretty good way to look.
Right. It looks better than some people I know.
One of the better looking ones.
Right. <you know? laughs> Well, at age 10, she was playing hooky after, I guess, once she went to the museum, I'm sure that kind of really perked her interest. And she started skipping school, and
yeah,
she met somebody very significant that kind of, could you tell us
she
about
did.
That?
She did. One day, the great Dr. Budge, who was the preeminent Egyptologist of the time and the director of the Egyptian section, he had noticed her. So this time he came up to her and he said, why aren't you in school, little lady? And she said, because school doesn't teach me what I want to know. And he said, well, what would that be, pray tell? He said, hieroglyphs. There's Dr. Budge. He was a very short, very plump, very eccentric, brilliant man. He was fascinated by this little girl. And he said, well, I could teach you. So he took her under his wing. And on the promise that she would go to school, but come after school. And for a period of time, I don't know how long, a year or 2 years, they would have these sessions. He would teach her hieroglyphs and send her home with pyramid text hieroglyphs to translate, to copy first and then to translate. So he was not just teaching her to copy, but to know what it all meant. She was in heaven.
So did she know any type of hieroglyphs before? No?
Nope, not a thing. Nope, they were all there in the museum.
But how did this man, how did he get so fascinated with actually teaching this young lady?
Because she was so darn bright and so insistent that she must learn this. He just, I think, was charmed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, we always have one or two people in our life that changes our direction. So,
it's big time.
And so he also warned her about something.
Well, he happened to have been an expert on Egyptian magic. And little Dorothy was quite intrigued by the whole concept because she said she had an uncle who didn't say very nice things and she wanted to basically get rid of him.
Oh.
And Dr. Dodge said, no, no, no.
Let's not do that.
You're not one to learn magic.
And at this time, she's not had a chance to visit Egypt yet, correct?
No, but she knows she's going to, and she knows that she's going to move heaven and earth to get there.
To get there.
Yeah.
Well, and then, so this is where I say the kind of intuitive for me that, you know, where she had a visitation.
She did.
At age 14. Tell us about that.
It was during the war, World War One, and a lot of the children from London were sent off to the countryside because of safety. And so she went to live with her grandmother. And when she was 14, she had a visitor. She woke up in the night with a presence. And it should have been a frightening presence, but she said later it wasn't. But it appeared to be a mummy standing over her bed, with eyes that looked haunted, if you will, of course, but that looked desperate. And he was silent. He reached toward her and touched her nightgown. And then she found herself screaming and he disappeared.
Wow.
And her grandmother came in and said, well, what's going on? And how did you tear your nightgown? Oh, nothing. But she really wasn't afraid because she knew it was SETI.
So she was scared, but she
sort of scared, but
kind of more startled than
yeah.
But she knew that this was someone from that she knew.
She did.
Wow.
And he looked really upset, like he had just broken out of the crypt.
So was this a beginning of contacts, or was this like kind of the door opened and now he visited her often, or is this?
No, it was a one time
for
many, many years, but she was on her personal crusade to read every book she could about ancient Egypt and to continue her studies. And she was so sorry to be away from Dr. Budge. They corresponded constantly. And she had training in art. And so she was doing that. And then after the war, her father's business dried up.
Like
master
many
tailors weren't in great, you know, after the war.
Right.
And he had dreams of starting a movie house. The new silent movies, and he did that. And for the intermissions, he had little Dorothy singing and dancing. And she organized a play based on the Lamentations of Isis and Nephthys.
Oh my gosh.
The grieving over the death of Osiris and begging him to come back. And she organized it with all the little people around Bristol, little children, and put on this play. And she, this was also a time when a lot of incredible Egyptological work was being done. So right. people were fascinated. So it wasn't all that strange, but she played the role of Isis.
I mean, that's really kind of beyond her years anyway. Most kids that age, they want to do what's current, or, you know, they don't want to talk about doing Egypt and playing Isis and all that stuff.
No, she wasn't like other girls.
Right, at all.
And she didn't want to get married because she said later, I had seen the best. And all the boys who were wanting to marry me just didn't live up to it.
Yeah, like
so she had this fantasy. So far, it was kind of a fantasy.
Right.
Well, until she met a certain Egyptian graduate student.
I was going to say, until she met somebody. What now, was the graduate student in...
In London.
London, okay.
She went to London to work with a newspaper. And it was a newspaper that was working for Egyptian independence from England. Because she was a real partisan now,
right.
all in favor of Egypt. Not so happy with the Brits.
Right. And so how did they meet? Was it at a party?
Basically at a political rally.
Oh, okay.
Where they were marching in front of Parliament. And he found her quite intriguing. And she really was a good looking young woman.
Yeah, I showed that earlier.
This
is a picture of her, and she was a beautiful lady.
And very, very blonde, very blue eyed, and nothing like this Egyptian young man's, you know, girls back home. And so they almost immediately got engaged. And whatever Dorothy's motives were, it was a way to get herself to Egypt. And that's what happened.
And so did she have children fairly quickly, or did she?
Yes. Yeah. She moved in to her in-laws. They were upper middle class Cairo family, very proper, lovely people.
Right.
And yes, pretty quickly got pregnant. Something was happening about the same time. She started to have a visitor. She started to go into kind of a trance state in the middle of the night, night after night, and took dictation from this visitor who was spinning out a story about a sinner, a young woman, sinner, who was an Isis priestess, who had sinned against the gods and must be punished. And her name was Bentreshet. And after a while, Dorothy realized that this was her story. She just knew it. And she had been condemned because she wouldn't confess who she was pregnant by. And you didn't get Isis priestesses pregnant. And it happened to have been the king. And she protected him and wouldn't confess and killed herself.
Oh, no.
Yeah, not a good story.
No.
But when she came out of these trances and looked at what she had written, it was in Demotic, which is a type of Egyptian writing that she didn't know about. So she had to go and study Demotic to figure out what it was. And there was the story.
Wow. I mean, she had to be a bright, bright lady to learn all this.
She was carrying an awful lot on her shoulders.
Right. 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 So she, in her previous life, she was a priestess.
She had been the daughter of a humble village soldier who was away quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
Her mother had been a vegetable seller, and had died. And the soldier took her to the care of the local temple, which was being built, and being built by the Pharaoh. And she was 14. And he caught sight of her one day in the gardens of the temple. And that was it. That was it. But Om Seti defended him. I mean, our Om Seti today. She said it was not such an unusual arrangement for a 14-year-old girl to be married off or to have caught the eye of a powerful man. That was accepted, but it wasn't accepted because she was the priestess.
And how did, back then, how do they become a priestess?
I'm sure there were many ways to do it, but you know, for a village girl, often the family will consecrate you to the goddess or the temple.
Got it.
And then you undergo training to participate in the beautiful pageantry, all the ceremonials.
It almost sounds like, in some ways, I don't hope the comparison's not too off, but like a nun.
Oh, very.
Yeah.
Very. No, you were married
yeah.
to the god figure
yeah.
or the goddess.
Wow, so it's just a
and
different.
Her name. Training was to play the role of Isis in the great festivals.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so she was, in the former life, she was in love with Seti.
Oh, absolutely.
And so and it just carried
apparently
on.
Apparently he with her.
Yeah, and so it just carried on with her in this life. And then she ended up having a son. And what did she name it?
Guess what? In-laws were really perplexed when she said what she wanted to name her little boy, Seti. And they went round and round about it, and finally they capitulated because she was Dorothy.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to say back then, I'm sure still, you know, ancient Egypt gods, probably they didn't want to name their children after a pharaoh, maybe. I don't know. Now they probably wouldn't even care. Maybe they do. I don't know.
Now they do. You know, if there are Ramses running around today.
Right. Right. There are. Well, that's it. I mean, this story so far is so fascinating, and I can see why this intrigued you to want to even write a book. And before we continue, you said that you had some writings from her diary that I'd love to hear something from.
Oh, yes. I do.
Because then after that, I want to get into how she led Egyptologists to some hidden spaces.
Well, jumping forward quite a bit, several things happened, and it's all in the book, Om Seti's Egypt. But Seti eventually gets a dispensation from the powers that be. Where he is, which is Amenti, the afterlife, to come and be with her. Not just be with her, but husband and wife, phantom, be
right.
with her. And that happened after her divorce, needless to say. And he came every night for 4 years while she was working on the Giza Plateau with Selim Hassan, the great Egyptologist at the pyramids. So what happened was, after 4 years, she got a job in Abydos, her dream job. She was going back, and now she was going back to make amends for the sins of the past. So here's what happened. Her going back meant that she belonged to the temple again.
Oh my
God. And she had to be a virgin, or at least virginal.
Born again.
they just couldn't continue as they were.
Right.
So this is the last night of their intimacy before she left for Abydos. Here she's saying, Seti stayed with me all night and made love to me in a surpassing way. That was the last night that we ever made love together, and it was the sweetest. And then Seti said he intended to come to her in Abydos, but not as lovers. And however, he couldn't forego the clasp of her arms. And then she continues, oh, he says, this will, oh no, I, oh, Seti said, this will be a temptation, I said. And he replied, if there is no temptation, there is no test. Help me to be strong and do not weep. I said, why should I be forbidden to you? I am going to Abydos to help restore the temple, not as a priestess. And you know well enough that I am not a virgin. But he said, no, making amends is the only way they were going to be able to be together as husband and wife forever later.
Wow.
So that set the table for the rest of her years with him coming at night.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about ancient Egypt. She probed for answers to some of the puzzling questions about Egyptology. Mm. And there were many.
Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about Seti, and, you know, through 10 Commandments and, you know, many movie versions, we've heard of Ramses, we've heard of Isis, we've heard of Cleopatra, and we've heard of Seti, but a lot of people really are not real familiar who Seti was. And, you know, I don't know, is there Seti 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? So could you kind of give us a rundown who Seti was?
Sure. I think we need to go back to the dynasty previous.
Okay.
To the 18th dynasty, which ended with the revolutionary kingship of Akhenaten and Nefertiti.
Hmm.
And Akhenaten, I think most people are aware, closed all of the temples, got rid of the ancient worship, became the one through whom the one God spoke. Only through me, he would say. Hmm. Which is kind of familiar.
Right.
And in a way, he destroyed much of what had made Egypt great. He was a dreamer, probably a brilliant one, but distracted by his visions. And so the empire started to fray at the edges. And by the time he died, a great deal of reconstruction had to be done. And there was a series of generals who became heads of Egypt. And there, the final one appointed his leading captain, who was named Ramses, to be the next pharaoh. And that's how the 18th dynasty started, the 19th. Ramses, who was quite a wonderful soldier, started to pull the kingdom together militarily. There was a great effort to restore the temples and restore the worship, the ancient worship. And Ramses' son was Seti. Seti was a born warrior, a great general. He was also a brilliant psychologist. And he set out to unify the country. He restored many of the great temples, and he built the temple at Abydos, which was dedicated to the seven major gods, which would bring pilgrims from all over Egypt, because every part of Egypt had its own primary god.
Hmm.
He was the unifier. And this is that beautiful temple.
It's a beautiful temple, but what's funny is if you think about Egypt and how it's portrayed in a lot of the pyramids, it's not like grandioso. I mean, I've never been there, so I can't say what's inside.
It's not Rococo.
Right.
It could be built today. Inside, it has an atmosphere that is so thick you could You can feel it.
Hmm.
Thoughts embedded in the stones, in the pillars.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Somebody, there's a grand statue of Sekhmet, the goddess, the lion-headed goddess that is a protector of women and a healer. And a friend of Hanny's was there who was a devotee of Sekhmet. And she took a photograph of the statue. She took several. And when she developed them, there was an ethereal presence leaning out of the torso of Sekhmet. And it appeared to have the profile of a cat with the right hand, the right paw raised as if in blessing.
Hmm.
And it was a heck of a photograph. And I wanted to put it in our book because it was so obviously, you know, a good one. And Hanny had had it tested and it was authentic.
Oh my gosh.
Unfortunately, I guess I didn't tell Hanny how much the photo meant to me because he sold it to a Japanese publisher while I was working on the book. So
oh my gosh. So you couldn't
didn't
use
get
it.
That one. Anyway,
oh,
it was
that's too bad. Well, tell me what this temple, because I'm gonna get after this question into Om Seti's first visit to Egypt. We haven't talked about that yet, but what was it like in her time in the 18th dynasty of the terrain? Because we know it as desert. We know it as pretty much dead and just rock and sand. What was it like at that time?
You know, I can't tell you for sure, but I think it was still sand.
Oh, okay. I didn't
know. There were gardens. There were canals.
Yeah.
And Seti built his temple on a canal. So there was water accessible. And certainly with the Nile flooding every year, there was plenty of water to have a garden. And the Egyptians loved their gardens.
I bet.
Probably more so because there was so much desert.
Right.
And the temples always had beautiful gardens and wells and ponds. And on the roof of some of the temples would be these star pools where the priests would use them as mirrors to observe the motion of the stars.
Oh my gosh. I couldn't even imagine being back then and just being able to see what it was like to live at that time.
Magic had everything to do with life in ancient Egypt.
Oh, I'm sure. And I bet you the first time Om Seti visited Egypt, and I'm sure it was just like feeling at home. And was it this temple that wasn't discovered yet?
No, this one was known, but it was in ruins.
Oh, got it.
It had no roof. Most of the roof was missing. Sand had filled up the corridors. Yeah. And she was there to make it the way it was, the way she remembered it.
Oh, wonderful. What was, did she talk about her first time to visit Egypt?
Yes, that was when she arrived by plane to get married to her husband. And the moment her feet touched the tarmac, she got down on the ground and kissed it and gave loud thanks to Isis.
Oh my gosh.
And her husband didn't quite know what to do.
Wow. And I mean, I wish I could have seen that, her face, for the first time, and I wish they could have caught that on camera. But unfortunately, they didn't have the the means back then like they do now. Well, let's talk about this. What was some of the discoveries that she helped Egyptologists find? Because I know, didn't she kind of know some locations of things that weren't quite discovered yet, or no?
Yeah, well, when she went to Abydos, to help with the organization of the thousands of fragments of stone that had paintings on them. And she was such a good artist, and she had by that time 20 years of experience in working archaeological sites and recording and putting together, you know, the vast puzzles. So she arrived expecting to have this wonderful challenge. And walking around with the director of the archaeology there, she identified exactly where the original garden had been.
Oh my gosh.
Which maybe wouldn't have been a big mystery, but she identified where the rows of trees were, and the particular trees, and where a well was. And she was quite certain. Of course, by this time, I mean, at this point, nobody knew about her secret life. She was just this quite talented, quite unusual English woman. And actually, the first woman ever to be hired by the Egyptian archaeological.
Oh my gosh, that's big.
Yeah, I mean, she was a trailblazer for so many reasons. So she identified, you know, she said, well, I'm quite sure this would be a good place to dig. not intruding, still being humble because of her position, but seeming to know. And so the diggers dug, and they came up with roots from trees that were exactly where she said. And they found a well that they hadn't found before, and it had fresh water still in it. When she came to actually working with the temple and its layout, she remembered where many of the rooms were that hadn't been discovered yet. And she wrote an extraordinary book with my co-author, Hanny, that I would highly recommend. It's hard to find. It might cost $400.
Oh my gosh, wow. No,
it's out of print. If you can ever put your hands on it and you're interested.
Here, let me put a single shot on that. Wow, look at that.
Abydos, this is everything about how she found it, what it was like when she was there, the history behind it, and all of her searches within the temple when she had it all to herself. Nobody would be there. She would just go with a flashlight all over it, touching walls, knowing that if she touched a certain place, a stone would move and there would be the room that she remembers. So she found a number of rooms like that. Not only that, she had an extraordinary experience one day of falling down when she was walking on the roof and hearing a grinding sound and the floor opening up and her being rushed down a stone ramp and then a grinding sound again as the stones above her closed. And she found herself in what appeared to be the treasury of the temple with statues and gold things.
Wow.
And she doesn't know how she got out, but the next thing she knew, she was outside next to a well, and one of the gaffers, the guards, said, "What are you doing, Om Seti? You're all covered with cobwebs and dust." And anyway, she told her director about it, and he said, "Find it again." And she couldn't find it again. So she questioned herself whether the reason that she felt that it actually happened was that she came back with something, and it was a cloth of white linen, the kind that's used to cover up the ceremonial statues. And she gave that to Hanny. And I don't know what happened to it, but she said she spent so many hours after that banging and touching stones to find,
find
the key that would open it again, because she saw through the chinks of light what was there.
Well, I want to jump forward just a little bit about her reuniting with Seti. I mean, this gets pretty juicy. We got some conjugal intimacies and 4 years of nightmare visits or nighttime visits. I'm kind of curious to see why he decided to come back and visit her again.
He had been trying to when it came that first time when she was 14.
Right.
He said later to her that he had been searching and searching and searching until he saw or felt her energy in the Northern Islands, as he called them. And that's when he somehow broke through and forced his way down through the layers, the levels. And then when she was married, still married before everything just went to pieces, he sent a messenger from Amenti because he was living as a king in this dream world on the other side.
Right.
It was allowed that he could send a messenger to bring her to him. And so she had these astral travels with the messenger and then they would have their times together. After a while, and don't ask me exactly the mechanism for all of this, it was allowed that he could come to visit her on the earth plane, but it would involve drawing on her vital force to allow him to do it. And it could only be through her consent. And of course she consented. And that's when the conjugal visits began on the earth plane.
Wow. I know a lot of times I've talked to many, psychic mediums, intuitive, past lives. A lot of times we, in our lifetimes, we have kind of a group of people that follow us throughout our lifetimes on this planet or on this, not necessarily just planet of our existence. And every lifetime we seem to, somehow, one time I'm your mother, or next time I'm your father, or next time I'm the son. And I was wondering why Seti, how come they didn't, I mean, you probably don't have the answer, but how he didn't come back in a lifetime that she was alive, that maybe so they could be physical in the physical world together.
I think it had to do with the fact that they had sinned against the gods, and he was kind of stuck in this purgatory type state.
Makes sense, yeah.
And they had to work their sin
out
to the satisfaction of the gods. So I'm really hoping that that's what happened.
So his kind of almost a punishment of not allowing him to come to the life while she was here. That was kind of a punishment. So she could, and they could both learn from their mistakes.
That's sort of a simple cause and effect that probably isn't the
right,
real
right.
situation, but, Who knows? Who knows? I mean, we're very complex creatures.
Oh, yeah, we are. Well, our time is getting away from us, and we haven't even really got started with a lot of
it.
Oh,
no, there are all the things about the magical priests who are in suspended animation waiting to come back.
So let's jump ahead a little bit, and because I'm going to go over just a little bit, because I have so much more to ask you, because this, oh my gosh, this is so fascinating, and people are in the chat room talking about it, and if you guys have a question for Catherine Dees, we'd love to have you ask it in the chat room, and I'll ask a couple questions from that. But I want to go to this in 1956, or actually, was it 1952, when she went to the in a sacred well. And could you tell me about? I always find this stuff fascinating about this miraculous cure.
Yes, when she went to work at Abydos, it was not the first time she'd been there. She had been there 4 years earlier for a very quick trip. I can't recall why. And before she went, she wore glasses to do her close work, and she had trouble with her eyes. And when she was on that little visit, she went down into the sacred structure next to the temple that's called the Osirion, which is where the body of Osiris is thought to have been buried or entombed. And there was a well, and it was a hot day. And she splashed her face with water from this well. Ever after, she didn't have to wear glasses to do close work. Just instant fix.
Well, I'm looking also, I was looking here in 1956, Om Seti gets a dream job helping restoration of the crumbling temple. And this is where she helped reconstruct to what it was when she was there, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. All right, so tell me about the priest that you were talking about.
Okay.
Let's jump forward.
I'm
sorry. Yeah, I know. I can't believe the time has gone so fast tonight. I was like,
let me see. This was on one of the tapes. And I was sitting all by myself with a typewriter, with my Selectric and my recorder, transcribing these cassette tapes that Nanny sent me of their conversations.
Right.
And this is the one that just stopped me in my tracks. And here is Om Seti saying to Hanny, "I have another story to tell you, although I have no way of verifying its truth. In one of his visits to me, His Majesty told me a very strange thing. We were talking about excavations and things still undiscovered. And he said that here in Abydos and in the mountains behind, there are tombs cut deep into the ground in which are buried certain priests. These men were learned in things that even the most educated priests did not know about. They had achieved mastery of their minds and the laws of nature. His Majesty said to me, by their magic, their heka, they put their lives to sleep. He said that at a future time, which they had decided upon before burial, they would awake, even after many thousands of years. I asked, why should that be? Why would they do this? And he replied, to teach men the knowledge they possessed. But he said that while most of these priests were good and wise men, some of them were pure evil. That's when the hair stood up on my arm. And I said to him, can this be true? How could they exist so? And he said, I do not know. It is something I was told by a very learned priest in Heliopolis. I asked if he believed it, and he replied that it was difficult to believe, though he knew that some animals were able to sleep through the winter and wake again. If a simple little animal can do this, he said, why not a very knowledgeable priest.
That's great.
So I don't know if we have some of those priests walking among right. us, but sometimes it seems like maybe we do.
Right. That is great. Just actually one or two more questions, but this one, I want to hear about the treasure room that Om Seti falls into a hidden room.
Well, that's the one where she was walking on the double roof and fell down and then heard this grinding noise as the stones opened and she dropped and could never find it again.
So, and this is where the Seti was telling about an ancient magical book
needed to be
destroyed.
Yes. Yeah. She told Seti about it. And he said, you must try to go down there again, because there is a book written by the old pharaoh Amos of the early dynasties. And it's a book of magic. And it must be destroyed because it should never fall into human hands.
And she never did find it.
She never found it again.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, hopefully, if and when it gets discovered, it falls into hands that won't do evil.
Well, there was one more thing, and that was when she was translating the pyramid texts, she felt that she had observed a secret key to unlocking some of the more powerful spells. And I think she told Hanny. And Hanny asked me, if such a key existed, what would I suggest he do with it? And without a whole lot of thought, I said, I would destroy it. Not being an archaeologist, who would say, oh, how could you? But for the good of, for the greater good.
Yeah.
If there is such a thing, and the Egyptians knew a thing or two about the power of magic, I would honor that and
destroy.
Let it go.
So tell us about Om Seti's later years. What became of her in her later years and up until the day she crossed over?
She retired at, I think, the age of 68 or so.
Oh, still young.
Yeah, still young, still living in the village, living like a 19th century Egyptian woman among the villagers. And she had become an expert on the ancient practices, folk remedies, folk practices, as well as their magic. And she was known to be a healer.
Oh, okay.
She helped the women in their childbirth. She knew the potions. She, you know, they were all there in the ancient Egyptian writings. There were lots of medical papyrus. But she had a menagerie of animals. And one day her favorite pet goose, Seneferu, disappeared. And she had a pretty good idea that it had ended up in the cooking pot of a certain man.
Uh-oh.
And it wasn't long before he died a mysterious death.
I heard the men were scared of her.
They were scared to death. Quite sure she had worked a spell.
Don't mess with Om Seti.
but Om Seti, being a political creature, wanted the best for the village. And the village was still very much, well, the world had not come to the village of Abydos, and very few tourists had come. There was no road, no paved road. The ships didn't, you know, the Nile ships didn't stop there.
Right.
Well, she moved heaven and earth politically to get a road built. And from then on, the tourists started to come. And Abydos started to thrive.
That's great.
So it was quite a win-win for everyone.
I heard they have a new resort. And
she became the tour guide. People wanted to come there.
Just for her?
Just for her. Because she was so captivating. She knew so much.
I would have paid extra for that.
Jacqueline Onassis loved Om Seti. Came there. Many, many people.
So what about her offspring?
She had that son, Seti. She gave her son up to her husband after the divorce, knowing that she wasn't a proper mother. She just wasn't cut out for it. So they maintained some slight connection over the years, but very little. Yeah. And near her death in 1981, but maybe a year before that, her adult son and wife traveled to try to convince her to come and live with them in Kuwait, where they would take care of her. And then she could meet her grandchildren.
Oh, that's great.
And be with them. And she adamantly refused. And it was a very sad and heartbreaking situation for the people like Hanny, who wanted something good to come out of this mother-son relationship. Oh. And it just couldn't, unfortunately.
Did any of her grandchildren pick up her legacy of Egyptology or?
Not that I ever heard.
Yeah.
No, but she did befriend a young village boy, and she named him Horus because she thought that he had some special qualities relating to the god. And he became a real champion after she died and he grew up. And he was partly responsible for creating this new resort, I don't know what you would call it, hotel called the House of Life that offers spiritual experiences.
Oh, wow.
And ancient Egyptian forms of healing and tours and things like that. Certainly it benefits the village. And that would have made Om Seti very happy.
I would love to check that out. That sounds like a great hotel to go to.
Yeah. And there is a sense that there are a number of people who consider Om Seti the high priestess who is still overseeing the temple.
Hey, she proved she came back.
More power to her.
I was going to say, proved she came back once. So I'm sure she's up there wherever she's at, you know, guiding everybody else to what needs to get done. So
I won't say now.
Well, Catherine Dees, how do people find you? Can they go? I know they can pick your book up pretty much anywhere, Amazon. Where else can they find your book?
Independent bookstores, every place, Barnes & Noble.
And do you have a website, social media?
Not personally, but our publishing house is St. Lynn's Press.
St. Lynn's Press.
STLYNNS Press. And you can find the book there and lots of other wonderful books.
Well, I'm very honored. You're going to have to come back for a part two because we still have things to talk about. So
I would love to.
In the new year, we'll definitely have you back. Like I said, I love your background and you're just a joy to talk to. And thank you for putting the book together. It's been great, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Tony. You too. It was a real pleasure, and it was fun.
And everybody out there, make sure you go out and support Catherine Dees. And it's not Rick Dees' relation, I don't think.
No, there's a rumor that we're related, but we're not.
But please support and buy her book, and Om Seti, keep her legacy going. And maybe you guys can all go over to Egypt and visit some of these sites that she helped restore. That would be awesome.
I may have one more good trip left in me.
There you go. I'm sure you have plenty. But until next time, make sure you tune in on Mondays for Robert Hensley's Minuteman Report. Wednesdays at 3:00 for Bonnie Burkett for the Truth Be Told Transformation. And, of course, me every Friday right here on Truth Be Told at 3:00, and go to our website, Truth Be Told Worldwide. Listen to us on YouTube, subscribe, leave a comment. We'd love to hear it. But until next time, I'm Tony Sweet, and from Catherine Dees and myself, take care. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media, Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.